This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves sub-technical issues. I'm your host, Yehiye Swuhib, in Washington. Coming up.
This is to ensure that undocumented and infected persons do not cross our border and vice versa, that South Africans do not cross the border. It's not xenophobic. It's one, to protect our own citizens, and secondly, also to protect people coming into our country.
That was Patricia de Lille, South Africa's Public Work and Infrastructure Minister, on our country's decision to erect 40 kilometers fence on the border with Zimbabwe. Details coming up. Also, the saxophonist who pioneered Afro jazz and fused funk with traditional Cameroonian music, Manu Dibango, has died from a coronavirus infection in Paris. And 64 people believed to be migrants from Ethiopia have been found dead in Mozambique's Tete province. We'll have these stories and more on this special VOA Africa program. Our top story. Countries across Africa are shutting themselves off from their neighbors and telling their residents to shelter at home to help fight the coronavirus and keep it from overwhelming them as it has elsewhere. The pandemic is hitting Africa later than much of the world, but there are concerns that the extra time to prepare may not be enough, as shown by the devastation that Europe and the United States are dealing with. As fears rise that weak medical systems will have trouble dealing with the victims of the virus, borders have been closed, air traffic is near a standstill, and nighttime curfews are in place. Officials say the next 2 weeks will be critical for what UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres calls the true fight of our lives. He has urged warring parties around the world to stop fighting and instead battle a common enemy. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed urged G20 leaders to help Africa cope with the crisis by facilitating debt relief and providing $150 billion in emergency funding. The DRC, which is also dealing with a deadly measles epidemic on the heels of an Ebola outbreak, has closed its critical mining areas. And water shortages threaten to complicate the coronavirus battle because health officials have called regular hand washing an important preventative measure. Human Rights Watch calls on Ethiopia to restore internet and phone access in Western Oromia. VOA Salem Salomon has the story.
Millions of Ethiopians in Western Oromia are cut off from phone and internet access due to a government-imposed shutdown, the advocacy group Human Rights Watch said. The lack of information is particularly important as Ethiopians seek vital news about the global spread of coronavirus. Lead researcher Letitia Bader says it is also making it difficult for outside observers to gauge the humanitarian needs inside the Oromia region.
This means that their relatives who are living outside of the region are struggling to get any information about what's going on. This has also had an impact on the number of humanitarian actors who haven't been able to get good information on what the humanitarian situation and the security situation is like. So this is really having an impact on people both inside and outside of these affected areas. And this is happening within a context of reports of increasing counterinsurgency operations by the federal government and by the regional authorities in the area.
As of Sunday, Ethiopia had only 11 reported cases of coronavirus, but experts have urged the need for a nationwide public education campaign using television, internet, and radio. Health professionals are spreading the word of the importance of good hygiene habits and giving information on how to spot symptoms. The government's refusal makes it likely that key information is not reaching everyone, including those vital to control efforts in Western Oromia, healthcare workers, and humanitarian organizations, Bader wrote in a statement. The Ethiopian government began cutting connections to mobile phone networks, landlines, and the internet in the Oromia region, Human Rights Watch said. Affected areas include Kelem Wallaga, West Wallaga, and Horu Gudu Wallaga zones. The government's move is reported to be in response to unrest in the region, including clashes between government forces and the Oromo Liberation Army. Hayededna, the Oromia regional spokesman for the ruling Prosperity Party, said the armed group is more dangerous than the virus. I would say that in Wallaga, there isn't a virus, coronavirus, worse than Shenne, the armed wing of OLA in Western Oromia. It can be demonstrated with reason, he said, speaking about an ongoing counterinsurgency operation in the Oromia region. It is important, he added, to think about the safety of the population. Internet and mobile phone access in the country is controlled by Ethio Telecom, which has about 57 million subscribers. The blackout has prompted a Twitter campaign using the hashtag ReconnectTheWestETH. Additionally, on March 20, the International Oromo Lawyers Association wrote a letter to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed demanding change. The population is suffering behind a dark curtain, the group wrote in a letter. Without access to information of what is happening in these areas, public scrutiny of the act of the government is impossible. But Taye questioned how much of a role the internet has in preventing the spread of coronavirus in Ethiopia. Let alone in Wallaga, internet users across the country are very few, he wrote in a Facebook post in Amharic. Therefore, in order to disseminate the information, it is enough that people get information through radio and television. Bader said the current shutdown is part of a pattern by the government that included 9 shutdowns in 2009. She said the lack of access to information is eroding trust in the federal government.
The government should be looking at finding ways to make sure that information can flow freely, that important discussions about security situations, social unrest, can take place in a peaceful and positive manner. And obviously, these blanket communication bans are a problem.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Along with a raft of other measures to stem the tide of the coronavirus, South Africa recently announced it will buttress its border with Zimbabwe. Arigando gives us more on the story.
South Africa says it will erect a 40-kilometer fence at the Beit Bridge border post, one of the busiest border crossings between Zimbabwe and its southern neighbor. Pretoria says it needs to secure its borders as one of the emergency measures that it is implementing to help curb the spread of coronavirus and a tide of undocumented immigrants. Patricia de Lille, South Africa's Public Works and Infrastructure Minister, says a contractor has been selected to fast-track construction of the 1.8-meter high fence within a month at a cost of 37.2 million rand. It will span 20 kilometers on each side of the border post. De Lille told Parliament that the move is in line with the SA President's measures to secure the border.
This is to ensure that undocumented and infected persons do not cross our border and vice versa, that South Africans do not cross the border. It's not xenophobic. It's one, to protect our own citizens, and secondly, also to protect people coming into our country.
Some analysts in Zimbabwe say the timing of the move is opportunistic. While South Africa has a right to protect its borders, they say the country has long wanted to keep out illegal immigrants. Observers say the move is ironic because the announcement came before Zimbabwe recorded its first case of COVID-19. Political analyst Effie Ncube says the move by South Africa serves as an important lesson for Zimbabwe.
While it is easy to blame South Africa for what it is doing, we must be looking at ourselves as Zimbabweans, as the rest of Africa, and focus on stabilizing our own countries, democratizing our own countries, creating jobs back home, ensuring that there is freedom and everything that people need to stay at home, so that people do not need to flee away from their own homes into South Africa and other places. That is by and large the most important thing.
The Matabeleland region of Zimbabwe has over the years been a catchment area for illegal immigrants in South Africa and neighboring Botswana. A former border jumper from Plumtree speaks on the SA fence, saying it will not block Zimbabweans seeking a better life across the border.
Well, I understand the concerns of South Africans. They have a right to do that. But what I can assure them is somebody who was once a border jumper, really, we have seen more fences than those as Zimbabweans. And if need be, Zimbabweans will still cross that fence, no matter how electrified it is. So coronavirus is coming from China, it's coming from other countries other than Zimbabwe. So they should actually devise means to keep those citizens of those countries out. This is a targeted fence, to say the least.
Ngamuto Mabena of the Zimbabwe South Africa Association, which represents Zimbabwean immigrants in South Africa, urges Zimbabwe's government to facilitate legal movement across the border.
But we make a call to the Zimbabwean government to ensure that passports in Zimbabwe are available to ordinary citizens who might want to visit South Africa for different reasons. We at this stage, we cannot really say the erection of the border fence is xenophobic, because we have not engaged the South African government to understand its response. But we know that there are people that are using illegal points to enter South Africa, hence our call, which says that people should use proper legal entry points to get into South Africa.
Meanwhile, Michael Ndiweni of the Cross Border Traders Association, Bulawayo, says the pandemic poses a real threat to his members and the informal economy. Zimbabwe has had to rely on its neighbors for basic goods and services amid two decades of economic wars. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
You were listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm your host, Yeheyes Wuhib. Here is a recap of our top stories. Countries in Africa are shutting themselves off from their neighbors and telling their residents to shelter at home. And saxophonist who pioneered Afro jazz and fused funk with traditional Cameroonian music, Manu Dibango, has died from a coronavirus infection in Paris. VOA is experiencing some technical difficulties, so we are offering this program recorded earlier. We aim to return to our normal programming within a few days. And in the meantime, thanks for listening to Africa News Tonight. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Botswana's diamond industry, Africa's biggest and the world's second largest, is taking a hit from the coronavirus outbreak as key global buyers are blocked under a travel ban. Mokandisi Dube reports from Habrone.
Botswana's pillar diamond industry is expected to take a significant hit from the pandemic. Botswana on Monday banned travelers from 18 high-risk countries to avert the spread of the coronavirus or COVID-19. They include arrivals from Belgium, China and India, where many of the world's diamond dealers are located. The buyers usually travel to Botswana several times a year for sales arranged by De Beers, the world's leading diamond corporation. But the travel ban means buyers will not be able to come for the planned March 30th diamond sale, known in the industry as a site, reports Bloomberg News. Speaking via a messaging application, Habron diamond trader McLean Litswiti says as a result, the industry is set to suffer.
Most of the site holders come from areas that have high risk of the virus, which actually means they cannot travel to Botswana to come and buy diamonds. For the local diamond industry, I mean, if this thing persists, it's going to affect the manufacturing sector. That there's a likelihood that most factories will be operating at half capacity if the virus persists.
De Beers said if their travel ban remains in place, they will come up with a contingency plan, which could include having buyers use local brokers or buying site unseen. The diamond industry was already facing poor sales in the Chinese market over the coronavirus outbreak. De Beers Group Chief Executive Officer Bruce Clever, in a statement, said sales were projected to drop by nearly 40% from January to February. Speaking via messaging application, Harvard-based economist Keith Jeffries said the virus was slumping demand.
Because of the COVID-19 outbreak, people are not shopping as much, staying at home, etc., etc. So I think we will see that the demand for diamond jewelry will be weak over the next few months. People are not shopping as much. Maybe some weddings will be postponed. And that will ultimately affect the demand for rough diamonds.
Botswana is the biggest diamond producer in Africa and the second biggest in the world after Russia, making up more than 80% of the country's foreign reserves. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Haboroni, Botswana.
The saxophonist who pioneered Afro-jazz and fused funk with traditional Cameroonian music, the legendary Manu Dibango, has died at age 86, according to a statement on his official Facebook page today. The Cameroonian star died from a coronavirus infection. His music publisher, Thierry du Rapier, said he died early this morning in a hospital in the Paris region. A statement made public also says that the musician's funeral service will be held in strict privacy and a tribute to his memory will be organized when possible. The Cameroonian is best known for the 1972 hit Sol Makossa. The virus also has claimed the life of 66-year-old Orlis Mabele, the Congolese singer who was called the King of Sokus, which blends traditional African and Caribbean rhythms with pop and soul. He died in last Thursday in Paris, where he moved in the 1980s. Health experts say Nigeria isn't likely to meet the United Nations 2030 tuberculosis eradication target, as the country still accounts for the highest fatality rate from the disease in Africa. Officials say they're trying to address major factors like inadequate awareness and funding by offering free screening and treatment. For VOA, Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja as the world marks Tuberculosis Day on March 24th.
In 2015, Nigerian school teacher Funke Dosumu separated herself from her husband and children after learning that she had tuberculosis. Before then, Dosumu says she had been sick and coughing for weeks.
I couldn't eat. All I could do was cough through the night, sweat. I can't sleep. I can't take my bath myself. I lost my kg down to 42 kg.
For 1 year, Dosumu remained isolated and received treatment. But she eventually lost her teaching job as a result of stigma from the disease.
I lost my job during the time of fighting this tuberculosis. I didn't get my job back, but as a passionate TB survivor, I didn't relent. I'm still speaking about it because I know a lot of people are out there that lost their job the same way I did. And because of this, those that even want to advocate for TB will not be able to come out because of the discrimination attached to tuberculosis.
The World Health Organization says Nigeria has the highest TB fatality rate in Africa and one of the highest in the world. Health officials like the head of the TB program at Nigeria's Ministry of Health, Itohowo Oko, says part of the problem is inadequate funding along with stigma and lack of awareness.
Not many people know that a cough that had lasted for 2 weeks could be tuberculosis. And so rather than going to the health facilities to be tested, they rather go to buy, we all know, go to person medicine vendor who will give paracetamol.
Nigeria's health officials say the country needs about $278 million a year to address the funding and awareness issues, but it has only about 8% of what it needs. For years, Nigeria has been partnering with various organizations to fight the TB problem. Last weekend in Abuja, hundreds of citizens received free screening and drugs during a street rally organized by Nigeria's health ministry and partners like USAID. Debbie Nungo is a USAID program manager.
So we're currently funding interventions that partner with patent medicine vendors, because that's where people most of the time seek care first. We're partnering with community pharmacists. We're working with private care providers, private clinics, and getting them to, first of all, think TB when patients come into the hospitals, but also to be equipped to give them the right type of care.
Health experts do not expect that Nigeria will meet the TB eradication target by 2030, but the country is not as far behind as it used to be. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
64 people believed to be migrants from Ethiopia have been found dead in Mozambique's northwestern Tete province. AP reports authorities heard bashing noises from inside a container at a checkpoint and ordered the driver to open it. They found 14 survivors as well as the bodies. Officials say the victims died from lack of oxygen. The Mozambican driver later admitted he has been hired to smuggle the migrants from Malawi to Mozambique. Mozambique is a transit route for African migrants trying to reach South Africa, one of the continent's largest economies. So far this year, at least 200 illegal migrants, mostly from Ethiopia, Malawi, Egypt, and Somalia, have been arrested for attempting to enter Tete province, and all indicated their destination was South Africa. After years of devastating droughts, many rural families in the breakaway territory of Somaliland are migrating to urban centers. To survive, some women are going to business, challenging traditional gender roles that have long defined the workforce. Nihawa Dekar visited the town of Buwaro with the charity Oxfam and has this report.
48-year-old Anab Said's family used to raise goats and sheep in rural Somaliland, a traditional way of life for generations. But recurrent drought killed off their livestock in 2017, forcing the family into a camp for internally displaced people. When aid wasn't enough, Said opened her own business, a field usually reserved for Somali men. She says her family was used to herding animals and teaching their children to herd animals, and had no skills or education to find work in the city. So when she arrived in the town, Said started cooking sheep's heads and stomachs to make money. Said is the first woman in her family to run a business, and her restaurant often earns more than her husband, who works as a laborer. But having a wife provide for the family flips Somali patriarchal society on its head. It can also be risky. The deputy head of the Ali Hussein displacement camp, Jama Aden, says men can abuse women in the workforce, even at restaurants. He says that when women leave their houses to work, they face many risks. Often the men buying food from them will eat and then refuse to pay. The charity Oxfam says displaced women and girls in Somaliland also face a higher risk of sexual and other gender-based violence. 2 years ago, Said's relative was sexually assaulted on her way from the camp to work in Barau as a cleaner. But Somaliland's Minister for Planning and National Development, Hassan Mohamed Ali, says when wives like Said find work, it ultimately helps the family.
I think in the first place, if the husband is also cooperative, kids can go to school. The opportunity of kids going to school and finishing it is actually an asset. You can count that this will help the family in the future. And at the same time, this woman will learn certain skills, different skills, and that will help her actually to manage, cope with the changing situations.
Oxfam says providing work for women should be a priority as Somaliland shifts from a rural to urban-based economy. For Said, opening a restaurant was simply about taking care of her family and putting food on the table. Neha Wadaker for VOA News, Barau, Somaliland.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yehiji Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. Thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.